Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
The Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, joins me in the studio now. Good morning to you. You're very welcome.
Thank you, Claire. Good morning.
We are not used to good news, and the government is not used to good news. I just wanted to ask you about Wednesday night's Cabinet Subcommittee briefing. What was the atmosphere, the vibe like in there? I mean, you heard the recommendations from NPHET. You wouldn't be used to hearing positive recommendations from NPHET, right?
Not in some time. No, it's been a brutal year for the country. It's been so hard for people in terms of mental health, isolation, loneliness. It's been such a difficult year. And because of my role, and I, you know, Tony Hoolan and I work about three doors down from each other in the Department of Health in Ronan Glynon, we would have been discussing all of this in the lead up to this.
And so you had an inkling that good news was coming in terms of their recommendations before you walked into that meeting?
Certainly, yeah. But nonetheless, the recommendations were very well received. I think a sense of relief for everybody, certainly in that room, because ultimately Cabinet has had to make decisions that no one ever wants to make. Awful decisions that have awful impacts on people in terms of isolation and loneliness and business and economy, and so many difficult things have had to have been done. So to be presented with a very positive picture was fantastic. And, you know, for me, I really feel very proud of our nation right now, because the reason we can have the conversation we're all having this morning, and the reason people can feel this sense of relief, is because over the last while, the country has acted together to drive this virus down. So 4 weeks ago, we had a similar COVID committee meeting, and the forecasts we were given by NPHET showed that things could get really quite bad, really quite quickly. And the best case scenario we saw was that the cases would go up to 1,000 a day, that the best R number would be 1.2. And we sent a very strong message out, and our doctors, our clinicians, NPHET sent a very strong message out at that time saying we gotta step up once more. And as a nation, not only did we stop the cases going up, but we actually pushed them back down again. Mm-hmm. Now, they are stepping up again now, but that's why we've been able to have that conversation.
So Dr. Holland said, didn't he, that the option that you've gone for, this is low to medium risk. Was there any push and pull there? Was there anybody, and I'm asking about Dr. Holland as well, who was saying we should be going for low risk really here until we get the vaccinations up to 40, 50% of the population?
Well, this was the package that was presented to us. So NPHET didn't come and say, look, here's a low risk option, here's a medium risk option, and here's a higher risk option. This was the one package that was presented. And based on their analysis, as I was saying, because of the effort everyone has gone to push the virus down, and because of the amazing impact of the vaccine program, we were able to have a very positive conversation, which they believe is still low to medium risk.
Okay. And what level are we going to be at now? Like, do the levels exist anymore? Because this is really important, in particular for employers when they're assessing risk in the workplace, isn't it?
Yeah, the levels, to be honest, you could make an argument that we're at, you know, we'll be moving. We know we're at level 5, and you could make an argument that we're moving, you know, to a 3+ or a 4-. I think at this point, it's probably better to just look at the measures that have been announced, because some of them.
So the levels are gone, really, is what you're saying. If you haven't had a conversation at the level that you operate about what level we're heading for, we probably can discount them altogether, that system.
I think to an extent we can. I think as an architecture, it's still very useful to have there. But certainly one of the things I was doing was highlighting it for each of the categories, what level we're going to. And the reality is, for some it's 2, for others it's 3, for others it's 4. So I think at this point, it's a very useful architecture to have in the back of our minds, but really we should just look at what the measures are
and
what's being relaxed.
Levels.
Exactly.
Okay, now you yourself spoke about, you know, keeping an eye on what happens in May, and what happens in May will dictate what happens in June. Mm. This has been referred to by the Taoiseach as the emergency brake on the plan. So who has their hand on the brake? Is it NPHET or is it government?
Well, both, I would say. So NPHET will advise government. Ultimately, the pulling of any such brake is a decision by government, but a recommendation to it would come from NPHET. And as I was saying at Cabinet yesterday, my job as Minister for Health is to be nervous right now. There's a lot of positivity. I'm going to be getting up every single day through May nervous, looking at the infection rates, looking at the cases, looking at the outbreaks, because while it is positive, it's volatile. And the message we were all discussing at Cabinet yesterday, and I can hear the clinicians talking about it and the politicians talking about it, is the advice we have is that if we embrace these measures, it's low to moderate risk. But if we go beyond them, which we're all tempted to do, if we go beyond them, we could have a problem. We all know what happens. We all remember very clearly what happened in December and January. The situation now, arguably, is more volatile in one way because almost every case is now the B117 variant, which is so much more contagious. Countering that, we have this extraordinary positive impact from the vaccine programme.
Mm-hmm. I heard Professor Gerald Barry this morning on Morning Ireland quoting the situation in Chile, and also Paul Cullen did the same in the Irish Times, that warning bell where they opened up with 35% of the population vaccinated. We have around 30%, and the danger that comes with that, they had a serious spike. That's where the concern lies, isn't it?
It is.
We're not at the tipping point.
We're not. We're not. As we move into June, and as we're doing hundreds and hundreds of thousands every week, we'll begin moving to that herd immunity place, right? We'll begin moving to where you get more than individual protection. You begin to get a community effect by having so many people there. But in May and probably early June, we're not there yet. So what we're doing right now is striking a balance. I think the two words that I heard that resonated with me were hope and caution.
Okay, let's talk a bit more about vaccination now, because the Taoiseach on Primetime last night said there's no reason why we couldn't vaccinate in parallel. And I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about that, because Taoiseach said on Morning Ireland that this might happen. So the question is, might the over 50s be getting vaccinated with Johnson & Johnson? And then you'll have the 45 to 49 year olds getting the mRNA and the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. That option, it would seem from what they're saying, is clearly on the table, is it?
I'm working through exactly those options right now with the Department of Health, the task force and the HSC. It's exactly the analysis we're doing today, over the weekend and early next week.
So people between 45 and 49 might get vaccinated before those in their 50s who have to wait for Johnson & Johnson. That's on the table.
It's not so much before, it's potentially in parallel. So no decisions have been made. What we're looking at right now is we've had a number of very large changes in the last week or so around supplies and NIAC advice. The good news is it's all going very well. So the focus right now, we've plenty of vaccine for everyone who's in the categories who are being vaccinated now, and then another
60 and over.
And then another really positive thing happening, of course, next week is we'll be opening the portal for 50 to 59.
But so you don't have enough Johnson & Johnson for those people
right now. So what we're doing right now is we have plenty of vaccine for everyone who can register for the portal, and we'll have plenty of vaccine in the coming weeks. What we're thinking through is, in several weeks' time, then, is there an option to begin vaccinating, for example, the 40 to 49 cohort in parallel? But I want to stress, we're running the numbers at the moment. We'll be working on this through the weekend, and we'll be looking at various policy options early next week.
Will you look at giving the over 50s the mRNA vaccine?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the good news is we have four incredibly effective, really safe vaccines, and we have a huge demand from the public for them.
I mean, it's just when you look at efficacy rates, and Johnson & Johnson is 66% on average. And if I'm over 50 and that's the one I'm going to get, I'll be looking at the Pfizer going, well, that's 95% effective. I know which one I would like to get.
Well, it's important to say, first of all, that there are several categories of protection. So the one we all talk about is the one you've just referenced, which is, do you become symptomatic with the disease? There's another one, which is, do you become seriously ill, and then protection against fatality? And the numbers for each of the vaccines are different. So there's no one number that accurately says...
Well, I'm quoting the World Health Organization figure there, and I think any reasonable person would look at 66% versus 95% and say, I want the 95% effective vaccine.
What I'm saying is there are other numbers as well, which is protection against serious illness, for example, which is one I'd be very interested in. So that's the first point. The second point here, though, is this is a population-based vaccination program. So, of course, each of us wants to be vaccinated to protect ourselves, but having everyone around us vaccinated is as important as well. That's how we'll really drive down the numbers.
But I suppose it's important for people between 50 and 59 to know whether you're considering asking them to wait when, because by virtue of their age, they're more at risk, aren't they, of serious illness?
Absolutely. And that's exactly what we're working through at the moment. So we have a few different principles for this programme. One of the principles is we're not going to leave vaccine in the fridges when it can be given out. So when we have vaccine, that's been, I guess, the overriding principle of the programme has been safety, number one. But number two then has been get the vaccine out as soon as it arrives into the country. And so we're looking at how that marries up with the third principle, which is do it, as you just said, according to risk.
OK, and the targets then for the end of June, the famous 82% offered a first dose, but there's another target as well, 55% of adults fully vaccinated by the end of June. Are you sticking with both of those commitments now?
Well, what these have always been have been forecasts for if the vaccines come in. Our target is to get the vaccines out, right? That's our target. As the forecast now is in terms of delivery, if it all comes in as agreed, which it may or may not, we know there's been a lot of bumps along the road, but if it does, we would be on target to have 4 in every 5 adults who wants a vaccine to either be vaccinated or, you know, signed up on the portal ready. I have the numbers here. There's big numbers coming in. So for April, May and June, the total amount currently agreed is about 4.5 million vaccine doses. Now, but as we know, those figures have gone significantly down, or we had very good news recently with Pfizer where they went up.
Dr. Mary Favier said to me yesterday that it would be very optimistic to hope to reach those targets, and the Taoiseach saying it will be very challenging to reach those targets. So do you have to be careful with that commitment now as you sit here?
It is challenging. It absolutely is. You know, we have pushed this vaccine program as fast as it can go. And really what we're saying is if the vaccines continue to come in as they are meant to, and we can keep pushing this vaccine program as fast as possible, that is what we should see. And it's worth reiterating, even though I inadvertently made a date up on the radio yesterday, which my friends were delighted about.
The 31st
of June obviously does not exist. My granny taught me that rhyme when I was 7, sorry. but the point I was trying to make was, you know, there's been a lot of focus on the end of June, which of course is the 30th of June. But there's been a lot of focus on the end of June. But, you know, the last week in June, hundreds of thousands of people will be vaccinated. The first week in July, hundreds of thousands of people will be vaccinated. So it was a date that was given that there's been a lot of focus on. But really, you know, what we have to do is ensure that as the vaccines come in...
You're softening us up there now. You're softening us up. You're not going to be at 82% by the end of June. And you're just telling us that that's a bit of a soft date now. That's what I hear.
Well, I appreciate that's what you might hear. I guess I'm just trying to be transparent, which is as the vaccines come in, we'll get them out. If the vaccines come in as they have been promised, then we will be on track for the end of June.
We've been trying to figure out what happens to people who don't take their opportunity to get a vaccine. So the people in the 60 to 69 offered AstraZeneca, because Leo Varadkar said they'll have to wait till the end. We can't give an indication of when you'd be offered it again. Simon Coveney on this programme said they would go to the back of the queue. What does that mean, and what's going to happen to those people?
Well, first of all, it's not where the vast majority of people find themselves.
Yeah, so but for the people who do.
Yeah, so but first, to be clear, the vast majority of people are taking which of the incredibly effective vaccines have been allocated for their cohort. There are people who are saying, for whatever reason, I would prefer this vaccine to that vaccine or the other vaccine. The current program is run based on we are allocating vaccines according to cohorts in order to get the most impact and do the most amount of good as quickly as possible. Of course, anyone can say, I'm simply not taking that vaccine. I want a different one. That's their right. But what we're not doing is we're not at the moment providing choices between vaccines for obvious reasons.
Well, what does back of the queue mean? Does that mean that if I'm 67, I don't want AstraZeneca, that you won't come back to me again until all of the 18-year-olds are done?
Well, it's a fair question. It's not my phrase, right? But I guess what it means is if you're in a cohort where you're being offered any, I don't want to talk about any specific vaccines, just if you're being offered a vaccine, say, actually, I'd prefer one that isn't available for my cohort. then it would be reasonable to say, you know, when that set of vaccines becomes available that you're looking for, which will be after the people who have been allocated those vaccines, then of course you can.
You're agreeing
one.
There with Simon Coveney then. You're saying that you go to the back of the queue.
Well, it's not a phrase that I would use,
okay,
but what I'm saying is...
But the thrust of it is right.
Yeah, I think it is fair, because the alternative is to be offering different, you know, to mm-hmm. be offering all sorts of different vaccines, and that will do one thing. That will slow the program right down, because, and that's not a luxury we have.
Paul Reid was on this program last Friday, and he said that the portal will remain open for you. So once it's open to 67, 65, as it is now, it doesn't close at any point. Hmm. So I could just not register now. I could come back in July, hedge my bets, register for my vaccine and get the Pfizer.
It's not how we're running the programme, right?
Well, like, will you turn me away if I'm 67 and and register in
July? I would be
July?
Too scared to turn you away, Claire. But but look, it's really not that big an issue. What we're finding is... we're getting a huge sign up. There's a huge demand for these vaccines. And what people do understand is that NIAC are putting safety first. I'm putting safety first, which is why we have these various restrictions in place. So if there are vaccines offered for any particular cohort, it's on the basis of the best possible clinical guidance mm-hmm. and science to say that these are safe. And the vast majority of people... They can't wait to get vaccinated.
So if you can do it logistically, those people will wait to the end, but there's a chance that they may be able to slip into the system at some point over the next few months.
I don't foresee that sort of game playing going on, for the obvious reason. We want to get people vaccinated, right? And so if someone thinks, well, you know, I'm willing to wait 3 months on the off chance that something else may happen, that's yep. 3 months while they're okay. at risk.
Listen, the AstraZeneca CEO, Pascal Soriot, he's quoted on Reuters this morning, just as you were coming in, the wires were dropping his quotes, and he was saying, "I don't think we've ever overpromised on COVID-19 vaccine supply. Everyone is wise with hindsight." Do you buy that?
Not for a second. No, absolutely not. They made very clear commitments. They have failed to deliver on those commitments. And that's one of the reasons that Ireland has joined the EU Commission legal case.
Yeah, Paul Reid said last week that the frustration he has with AstraZeneca would blow the roof off. Are you in the same position?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because what people are seeing is these big changes in the commitments from AstraZeneca. But what Paul Reid and myself and everyone involved in the vaccine programme is dealing with is changes, very frequent changes to the AstraZeneca deliveries at a level we're not seeing from a lot of the other companies. And it is very frustrating. Yeah. Now, can I just soften that slightly by saying, while it is deeply frustrating, and hence there is a legal case being taken, the vaccine itself is incredibly effective. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of it coming into the country. And it is will have already and will continue to save a lot of lives.
Have you an update on how many cases of each variant of concern we have in the country as of today?
I do. So the P1 variant, which is the Brazilian one, there's 27 cases, three of those in the last week. The P1351 variant, which was first identified in South Africa, there's 71 cases, with 16 of those identified in the last week. And then there are these other variants of note. They're variants of interest
India?
That haven't been...
Is that one of the variants of note?
Yeah, so we've eight of those. That's the B1617. There's also a California one, yeah. Two of those. There was a B117 with what they're calling an E484K mutation, two of those. There's the P2 variant, which was first identified in Brazil, 15 of those. And the B1526 variant, first identified in New York, six of those. And then the B1525 variant, first identified in Nigeria, 20 of those.
Where are they coming from now? Are they travel-related? Particularly, I'm looking at the one that originated in South Africa, 71 with 16 extra in the last week. Do you know, are they community transmission or travel-related?
It's both. So one of the concerns that public health had was that when you begin to lose the ability to track exactly where one of the variants came from. So there is a number of that 71 that are now community transmission.
That's a scary position for us to be in, because we know there is an issue, isn't there, with how effective AstraZeneca is against that one in particular.
These are a concern. There's no question about it. It's why we've brought in, Ireland has now by a very long way the most robust protections in place in terms of international travel. And some people have asked why we've gone so far, why we've gone way ahead of the rest of the European Union. And this is why. It's to protect people from these variants.
And you've put India on the list for mandatory hotel quarantine. But
that's right.
It's not in effect yet, that decision, is it not?
The decision is in effect. And what we do is we give 72 hours for people to make arrangements and to get a little bit of warning. However, on India, by proxy, for the majority of people coming in, it's in place anyway, because people coming in from India tend to go through Istanbul as a hub, the Emirates as a hub, and those countries have been on already. And simply going through those countries deems you category two.
And when did the clock start ticking then on the 72 hours?
As of today. So it'll be active, I believe, from Tuesday morning.
OK. The July targets around hospitality now, they're aspirational, as was said yesterday. So if you're a hotel owner or restaurant owner or pub owner, should you be hiring staff now or do you wait? I think the Taoiseach said this morning, actually, that he would hope to have indoor pints in July.
Yeah, wouldn't we all? And certainly outdoor pints in June on the 7th of June.
But indoor dining and drinking, do you think it's a possibility in July?
I really hope it is. We can't say yet, and we have no guidance from NPHET on that yet. But if the vaccine program continues at the pace that it is now in terms of getting all the vaccines out, we begin to hit this herd immunity level around, you know, late June and July.
But would you be advising those business owners to hold off on hiring staff, because they need time clearly to get their ducks in a row?
My view on this is what's been announced for May will happen. What's been announced for June, we all hope will happen. We are all determined to make it happen. And if we all as a nation continue to not go beyond the public health advice, then for June it should happen.
Okay. Just on that, what's going to happen in May, one of the things is that hairdressers are going to open. That mightn't be an issue for you, but it's an issue for me. Gerald Barry again on Morning Ireland saying that the UK data shows personal services have a 0.05 impact on the famous, the R number, the rate of transmission. And I was listening to that wondering, why on earth have they been closed for this period of time if that's the case, and if we knew that that was the case?
You can't take any individual measure and say, but sure, this one would have been okay, right? You could apply that potentially based
every
on what you've
sector,
just said to
every
hairdressing.
Every sector is saying that and you know that.
But every sector does, right? So people playing golf said it, people playing tennis said it, people who want to go hill walking said it. It gets said about every sector. You can take any individual action and say, surely this one action wouldn't make a big difference. And for the majority, it wouldn't make a big difference. But it's the collective effect of all of these things. So what did we do? We prioritised healthcare. We prioritised education. And so we were able to open up all of the schools. We're one of the only countries in Europe where it's all in-class education now for all primary and secondary
school. We're also the country with the hardest, longest lockdown, you know?
And potentially at the moment the dodgiest haircuts because of it.
Yeah,
that may be true.
Looking back now at the last number of months since Christmas, do you think we were just too severe?
No, I don't.
The measures?
No, I don't. It has been incredibly difficult. But if you look at how we compare to the rest of Europe, for example, we compare very well in terms of fatality rates. We went from having the highest rate in January to consistently one of the lowest rates. What does that mean? It means a lot of lives have been saved. It means we were able to return to full education, which other European countries haven't been able to do.
Okay.
And it means we can have the kind of conversation we're having this morning about opening up.
Antigen testing. Why aren't we using antigen testing? Because when we talk about not reaching the tipping point of vaccinations, would it not be a really good way of opening up? Professor Kingston Mills suggesting that people who are not vaccinated, who arrive at hotels and B&Bs, should be tested. Surely that would be a great additional safety measure.
I think so. And actually, I appointed Kingston Mills to the expert group that I set up for exactly this reason. So there are very strongly held views by very reputable people on both sides of this argument. Some people, like Kingston, believe that it's a very, very useful tool. I agree. I am one of those people. But there are other people who really think that it's quite risky. And I'll tell you what they're worried about. They're worried about...
Who's this now? Who's the other people?
So a lot of public health people in Ireland. Right.
Dr. Houlihan doesn't like antigen testing.
I don't want to individualise it, but a lot of public health people...
But you're the minister, so it must be someone with a lot of clout now who believes that they're not good enough or they don't reach the mark if, you know, for us not to be using them.
Well, there are legitimate concerns that people would get a clear test who may not be clear because they're not remotely as accurate as the PCR tests. And then they would behave believing that they had the same as a clear PCR test and put themselves and other people at risk. That's the big concern.
I think most people know that they're not 100%. What I'm saying to you, it's a belt and braces thing
while we're
waiting for more people to be vaccinated.
I agree, which is why I set up the group. And we are implementing that report now. So, for example, Minister McConnellogue and I have a programme going on in the meat processing plants with in excess of 20,000 of these rapid tests being used a week. Minister Harris and I have had some really good conversations about their use in higher education. Minister Foley was updating Cabinet yesterday on pilots within schools. So my view, having read the expert report, is that rapid testing is one useful tool in our entire arsenal.
The other thing we could use when they come into force, the EU digital green certificates. Could you see that they could also be used domestically to get into an indoor gig, for example, where you'd show I've either had a negative PCR test, I've been vaccinated, or I've had COVID in the last 6 months?
Some countries are doing exactly these kinds of experiments. So there was one in Spain. The Israelis were looking at that as well. There are mixed views on this. I've spoken to quite a few people about this, and there's mixed views really from a philosophical or an ethical perspective, saying, is it fair? Is it right to be able to say to somebody, sorry, you can't come to Electric Picnic, or you can't go into the gig, or whatever it may be, because you haven't been vaccinated?
Well, that's not what we're saying, though. It's if you haven't been vaccinated, but you mightn't be vaccinated, but you might have a negative PCR test. You can come in. You might have had COVID in the last 6 months. You can come in.
It's certainly something to be looked at. But I do know that there are strongly held views on both sides of this as well. Other countries are looking at it. And I think to your question, Claire, the digital green cert is exactly that premise. What it's saying is if you meet the following criteria, then essentially you can travel freely within the EU.
Mm-hmm. One of the elements of that is a verification on the cert that you might have had COVID in the last 6 months. And when I heard about this, I thought, well, who's going to do that? Who's going to supply that information to whoever's running the digital cert system? Of course, it'll be the GPs, won't it? Has that conversation been had around the additional workload there?
Well, this would be the labs. So it would be a lab verified test. So you had COVID, right? So you will have had a lab verified test.
So how do I get that information onto my green cert?
The operationalization of that is what's been worked out at the moment. There's potentially three criteria. There's you're vaccinated, you've had COVID within 6 months, lab verified COVID, or potentially you've passed some regimen of testing either. So all of that has been worked through.
Can you see the problem, you know, where it'll be the labs or the GPs who'll be, the phone lines will be clogged up with people who want to go to Fungarola and they need confirmation that they had a positive test within the last 6 months?
So no decisions have been made as to how that would be done, but I would be very reluctant to do that model for exactly that reason. You couldn't have the GPs been phoned up saying, can you write me a letter?
Yeah.
Remember, they're all lab verified tests.
But there's no other plan in place, or it hasn't been worked through yet, certainly in this jurisdiction, how it would work.
It's been worked through at the moment, but okay. I don't believe it would be a case where GPs would have to be involved in that.
Just on a separate issue, well, still on vaccines, Deirdre Murphy, the consultant at the Coombe Hospital, said this week that you've had the report into the administration of COVID-19 vaccines to the relatives of staff at that hospital since the 1st of April, which is a month now. She gave us a statement. She said it would be helpful, very helpful, if the minister, Mr. Donnelly, would respond as promised to the hospital's commissioned report and my letter outlining the omissions and inconsistencies contained within the report. Have you responded?
we have looked for the letter. We can't find any such letter. So we have reached out to Professor Fahy on exactly this issue.
Her husband.
Yeah. But what I can say
is... She's asking you to respond to her letter, not to her husband's letter.
Sorry.
She says that you have the report from the hospital for a month and you haven't commented on it or given a response.
Yeah, and that is true. My view is this. What happened was absolutely wrong. I engaged with the board. They said they were going to provide a report. They did. And while they accepted that what happened shouldn't have happened, they weren't proposing any further sanctions. I don't share that view. It is an independent hospital, but it is fully funded by the state. And I will be engaging further with the board and further with the HSE on that. And I don't think it would be appropriate for me to comment any further than that. But I'm not satisfied with the answer back from the board at this time.
So when are you going to do something about it?
I'll be engaging in due course with both the board and the HSE. But I would prefer not to get into the detail of that at this time.
Okay. Maternity hospitals, they're easing restrictions on visits from partners of women giving birth. We had a phone call from an extremely upset woman this week. Her husband is receiving cancer treatment and she's wondering when she might be able to accompany him into the hospital for the scans, the tests and the treatment, or will she simply just have to continue to wait outside? Has there been any decision taken on hospital visits?
It's been looked at all the time. And different services are making different decisions. And remember, different parts of the country are in different epidemiological situations. So Donegal, for example, at the moment, parts of Donegal mm-hmm. have very, very high rates of COVID. Parts of West Cork and Kerry, for example, very, very low rates. So there has to be some local judgment. It's looked at all the time. What I can say is the HSE is acutely aware of the need for people to be able to come in with family members, visit family members. They're making decisions based on keeping the people in the hospital safe. So when they deem it safe for the patients to relax that, they will do so.
Okay, so
and it's an operational decision for
the individual
HSE.
Hospitals yeah. or hospital groups may yeah. make that decision.
I believe that's appropriate because the epidemiological situation surrounding different hospitals is markedly different at the moment.
Minister, we'll leave it there. Thank you for your time. Minister
you,
Stephen Donnelly, we'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.